Fourth and final hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday afternoon. Here in a beautiful, beautiful day here in Nashville. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase McCabe has the week off. A much-needed break for him. Be back with us Monday after the Titans-Colts game on Sunday. What in the world will we be talking about a week from today? Our good friend Trey Wingo is on the line with us at Wingo Z. Or is it Wing Oz? I don't know, but more importantly, on Twitter, he is just over 7,000 followers away from being at 1 million. 1 million people. I just want to know, Trey, how are you going to get there? We need you to get to a million followers. That would be cool.
Well, it's funny. I've actually crossed a million twice. Like, once it happened, and then there's this big Twitter purge. And I lost like 50,000, I guess, bots or whatever. So I got it back up again, and then they did another one, and it was not as bad, but I lost a few. So that's the worst part. I've been there twice, and it's like, wait, what happened?
We've all had that fantasy guy, right? A running back that gets, he's at 101 yards or 102 yards late in the game, and you're like, yes! And your league maybe has that bonus for getting to 100 yards, and you're like, yeah, right! That kind of like pushed me ahead for the week, and then he loses 3 yards on the next play and finishes with 99, and you're like,
well, that actually happened once, like for real, in the 70s. It was a Falcons running back whose name I can't remember. He was the first Falcon player ever to rush for 1,000 yards in the final game of a 14-game schedule. They stopped the game and did all this stuff and you know, congratulated him. And then they continued for the final drive, and he lost like 7 yards and finished under 1,000 yards for the season.
That is brutal. Oh, that's fantastic. All right, so what was your take? Let's start on the Titans side of things. When you watch the Titans and the Ravens, and I've admitted all day today, because of, you know, Clowney going on IR, no Roger Saffold, their left guard, and no Kenny Vaccaro, and the bodies were just dropping left and right for the Titans. I was like, they're just not going to find a way to win this game. They're going to lose, and yet they found a way to win the game in overtime.
Yeah, that was a big one, right? Because whoever lost that game I thought was in real trouble in the AFC, just because of the power structure that we're looking at. Obviously, Pittsburgh is still undefeated, and the Chiefs are the Chiefs. I mean, let's be honest about it. And they're the best team until I think someone takes them down in the playoffs. So that was a really important game. And it showed two things stood out to me. And one of them is a byproduct of Tennessee, and one of them is a byproduct of Baltimore. So let's just start with the Tennessee side of it. Derrick Henry had 44 rushing yards on 18 attempts through the first three quarters. That's like 2.43 yards per carry. In the third quarter in overtime, he had 10 carries for 89 yards. You and I can do that math. That's 9 yards a carry. And we extrapolated a little further. Going back to 2019, the start of 2019, through postseason and everything, in the first half of games, he's amassed over 1,200 yards, 4.2 yards per carry, and 6 rushing touchdowns. In the second half and overtime of games, Derrick Henry, since the start of 2019, has rushed for over 1,800 yards. He's averaged 5.7 yards a carry and had 21 rushing touchdowns, which is a long mathematical way of saying physics matter, because it will wear your butt out trying to tackle a bear for four quarters. And that's what he is. He is a hammer, and if you just keep using the hammer, the tree is going to fall. And that's sort of the recipe that the Tennessee Titans have found to be very successful. And I know Tannehill is great, and they've been unbelievable in the red zone since he took over. I think second behind only Seattle percentage points-wise in terms of being the top cashing in on touchdowns in the red zone team in the NFL. But as Derrick Henry goes, the Titans go. And I think they're now 14-2 when he rushes for over 100 yards. And it's a remarkable thing to watch, because you can literally see him wearing the opposition down. So that was the one thing I took away from Tennessee.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, we've always heard about pitchers, you know, the pitcher, he gets stronger as the game goes along. Well, he is like that starting pitcher that truly gets better the deeper the game goes, right? He just seems to get better as you just mentioned. You just laid out quite well that he's a guy that in the fourth quarter just takes over. He becomes a closer in the fourth quarter for the Titans.
Well, you know, it's very similar to what the Cowboys had with Emmitt Smith in the 90s. And they're not the same back in any way, shape, or form, but they were just going to wear on you until you tapped out. I mean, North Turner, when he was their offensive coordinator, used to say they're going to get a heavy dose of 22 until they show us they can stop it. And it's the same way with Derrick Henry. I mean, it adds up. And, you know, in most cases, it adds up on the running back because the guys tackling him are bigger. Well, in Derrick's case, it's about a push, and he's faster than most of those guys. I mean, you know, it's like watching a sledgehammer slowly chip away at something that you want flattened. Eventually, the sledgehammer is going to win.
All right, what was your I rudely interrupted you on the other point.
All good, brother.
Okay. Let's flip to the Ravens. We've talked a lot about Lamar Jackson, and this offense looks, you know, completely different than last year. Last year it was through 16 games of regular season. Can anybody slow this offense down? I mean, they just seem to score at will on everybody. Well, nobody's saying that this year. What's changed in your mind?
Well, look, a couple of things. First of all, they had a 10-point lead at one point Sunday, and that would be significant because for the first 21 games where Lamar Jackson was under center for the Ravens, at any point, if they had a 10-point lead, they won that game. They went 21-0. And now they've lost two of the last three times that's happened. Yesterday and week 8 against the Pittsburgh Steelers, which tells you a couple of things. One, we made everybody, and we did were a big part of this. Look at the balance of the Ravens offense last year. They're the first offense to average over 200 rushing yards and 200 passing yards a game, which is great. But they were averaging 237 passing, which is really low numbers in terms of the passing offense in the NFL, the way it's constructed and defended and officiated right now. And I kept saying, this is a fun number to play with, but at the end of the day, the Ravens are going to go as far as their passing game will take them because that's the game. That's the way it's legislated right now for the most part. And until they have more of a consistent downfield threat, and some of that could be the receivers that they drafted that haven't been turned out. Like Hollywood Brown had a great debut in his first couple of games last year and has been very average since. They're a tight end heavy offense when it comes to receptions. Until they find a more striking ability to make chunk plays through the passing game, you can be the world's greatest athlete out there. And Lamar Jackson might just be the best athlete in football. But if you're one-dimensional, you're one-dimensional, right? And I think that they've just been found out a little bit, and you're not going to be able to make those crazy joystick plays, especially if you have to come from behind a lot. They're also not really good when they fall behind. So, you know, the league will catch up on you. You can't ever say what worked last year is going to work for us in the same way this year. And I think that's the struggle for Baltimore. And they got real problems now because they got to play the Steelers again. And, you know, that game was so important for both the Ravens and Titans yesterday because, as you said, the Titans are playing the Colts next. That Colts team is no joke, man. I mean, they were down big time to Aaron Rodgers and company, and they essentially shut them out until a field goal sent it to overtime, and then the defense came up with a big play to essentially steal the game with the turnover.
Yep, and like you said, Thursday night, the triple header, the final game is going to be Baltimore in Pittsburgh to take on the undefeated Steelers. And so with that being said, I want to ask you why no one is talking about Ben Roethlisberger as the MVP this season. Like, it's been all Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes. You've even had some Kyler Murray talk. I feel like everybody's been throwing out names all season long. And if the Steelers go undefeated, I don't think they're going to go undefeated, but if they did or they went 15-1, they finished the number one seed in the AFC. And you look at his numbers, oh, by the way, 24 touchdowns, 5 picks, in over 2,500 yards passing. Why isn't anyone talking about Big Ben? Traditionally, Trey, the MVP comes off the number one seed in a conference. Go look at the past MVPs.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And listen, there's two things about Ben that I think we need to address. First of all, it just shows you how important a quarterback is to your team. I am not a believer in wins and losses being a quarterback stat. But I do understand that they are incredible in manufacturing the opportunity for teams to win or lose games. It's essentially the same team with Chase Claypool. And the only other addition was they have Ben back instead of Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. So that tells you how valuable he is to that franchise. And the other thing about the Steelers we need to address is that Mike Tomlin is the most underappreciated coach in football. 14 straight non-losing seasons to start his career. Only one other person did that. That was Marty Schottenheimer, who I also believe is criminally underrated as a head coach. He has over 200 wins. He should be in the Hall of Fame. But Mike Tomlin, I think, is finally getting the appreciation. They won 8 games last year with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph as their quarterback. You know, he found a way to get that team right again after the entire Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell fiasco for 2 years in a row, which was an absolute joke. Now, why isn't Ben getting the love? Because Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. Like, was there anybody who was watching that game last night when they had a minute 43 left, didn't think that the Chiefs were at least going to tie the game or maybe win it? There was no doubt in my mind. I mean, yep. Derek Carr played amazingly last night. He played as well as any quarterback could play, and he did the thing. He led his team down to take the lead with under 2 minutes to go in a ballgame. As a quarterback, that's check. You know, I did my job, and then he had to sit and watch Patrick Mahomes do that thing. Patrick Mahomes has 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. The only 2 interceptions have both come against games against the Raiders. Not playing them anymore. You know, I think he's going to finish with 40-plus touchdowns and under 5 interceptions. And that's why I believe Ben isn't getting the love, because that guy might be the best to ever do it when it's all said and done.
We're talking to Trey Wingo, talking some NFL. Trey, you had a great story earlier. I went back and looked because I remember seeing something on NFL Films. I just Googled it. Dave Hampton is the running back.
Yes.
1972 for the Falcons, who hit 1,000. He was the first ever Falcon to hit 1,000. They stopped the game. They had a great presentation. And then it was like an icy game, and he lost 6 on the next play and never got back to 1,000. He ended up with 995 for the season.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. That's one of my all-time favorite stories.
That's a great story. So along those lines, not that particular case, but we were talking a lot about Derrick Henry. One thing we discuss a lot, Trey, is you want to have that sledgehammer, as you call it, available every week. And it does exact a toll, right, over time. And so managing the carries and the workload is going to be very important. And, you know, they've done a pretty good job of it, but he's going to end up with more carries than he's ever had in a season by the end of it if he stays healthy. So what's the balance in your mind? How do you approach that when you know you're tempted to give him the ball every play?
Yeah, and to your point, I think that showed up in the AFC Championship game last year, right? Because he had the amazing numbers against the Patriots and then the phenomenal game against the Ravens. Okay, so now you have to do that 3 weeks in a row, on the road, traveling. You're all beat to a pulp at that time of the year. And I think it just finally caught up with him in that game against Kansas City, even though they had a double-digit lead twice in that game. Look, Vrabel is really good at this, and I think that they'll figure out a way to make it work, and Arthur Smith will as well. But you're right. He gives you the best chance to win, but you want to make sure that there's something left by the time the playoffs roll around. And you can't hope to just, well, we'll get to the playoffs and then we'll use him. So you have to use him. But there are situations where you can say, are we up 10? Can we do something else? Can we make sure? By the way, can I just say the other thing that I took away from yesterday's game? I'm here for any Ole Miss wide receiver because they love the contact. That touchdown by A.J. Brown was phenomenal. I mean, you know, everybody loves DK Metcalf, and they should, and I get it. But that guy is a workhorse, man, and I think he doesn't get the love he should. Everyone looks at DK and the speed and the body. A.J. Brown's no slouch, man. And I just think they need to find a way to make sure when they can to spell him. But at the end of the day, you're going to use the guy until he says, I can't go anymore. And it may just be a situation where hopefully they don't have to play, you know. Well, look, it's going to be that way this year because only one team's going to get the bye. I mean, only one team's going to get the bye. So I don't think it's going to change any much this year. And hell, we may have 8 teams from each conference, depending on, you know, how we go through the final 6-7 weeks of the season here, depending on what happens. So I don't know if there's anything you can do about it at this point, because you got to dance with what got you there, and a large part of that is that large human being.
at this time of the year, and you've already referenced it a couple of times, Trey, a lot of teams are dealing with a lot of injuries. The Titans, we scrutinize every guy. We know what each guy means. We don't know by heart all of the injuries to all the other teams. I'm curious, in your mind, covering the league, does it seem like there are more injuries this year because of the circumstances, or is this just something that happens every year and it never ceases to amaze us? And we always lament when a guy like Joe Burrow goes down, or you've got a team that's missing three offensive linemen, et cetera. Does that happen every year, or is it more this year?
I think there's a little more of it this year, because remember, there was no offseason, right? There was none. And through the first few weeks of training camp, they were wearing those apps that said, you're 6 feet away. You know, you're not 6 feet away. Get away from me, Satan. You know, I mean, there's no other way to prepare for football than to play football. And what's interesting is that we didn't have any preseason games. We had minimal contact at camp. And I think that's showing up on some degree. And the lack of a real offseason, I think, is the story behind this more than anything else. Because you talk to anybody that played, you know, you get through the season, you're in January or early February. You just need February and March to sort of let your body just get back to normal. And then those mini camps start, and these OTAs start in late April and early May. And they're not much, but there's something, and the conditioning process begins, and the whole cycle starts to repeat itself. We had none of that this year. And obviously with the outbreak, it always makes it seems a little more interesting, because, you know, like the Raiders last night had 10 guys on defense that couldn't practice because of either they had COVID or they were exposed to someone that they thought might, you know, was a high contact risk. So they did it all virtually. I mean, it's hard enough to play Patrick Mahomes if you have everybody, but you take 10 guys away. By the way, the Joe Burrow thing, good Lord, that you could see on the replay. I watched it once. I won't watch it again. You see his knee pop out of location and then back into location on the play. It was just ugly. So I think it's a part of the attrition of the game, but it does seem like because of nothing was normal in the lead up to this year, that I think we're getting a little higher hit rate on injuries.
What have the Colts figured out? Because Phillip Rivers, the week of the first Titans matchup, was really under a lot of fire. The offense wasn't doing anything, and he's answered the bell, picked the Titans apart, had a nice game yesterday against the Packers, and then, of course, the rematch with the Titans. So what have they figured out? What has Frank Reich done?
Well, first of all, they are, in a lot of ways, up front built like the Titans, right? Their offensive line, their lines of scrimmage are great. Their defensive front and their offensive front are great. And they found a little bit of a combination that's working for them in Nyheim Hines and Jonathan Taylor. Now, the vertical game has been sort of hit and miss, right? It's been there at times, and it hasn't there at times. T.Y. Hilton has not had the best season by his standards in any way, shape, or form. But much like Tennessee, they're one of the most physical football teams in football, which is a redundant thing to say. I'll just say they're one of the most physical football teams. And, you know, that wore down Green Bay yesterday. I mean, Green Bay was up big time, and they took that punch, and they came back in the second half and said, you had your turn, now it's our turn. It's like those slap fight videos from Europe that come across. You know? Those two guys stand there, and someone slaps you across the face, and you think you got him, and he's standing there smiling, and then he hits you, and suddenly you're looking down, and three teeth are missing. So I think that's what Indianapolis is. They're not complicated. They're not, you know, schematically crazy. They just line up and want to punch you in the face, and they're really good at it.
They are indeed. Trey, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for your time, as always, and we'll see what unfolds in the next chapter of this season.
Yeah, it'll be great. Can't wait, guys. Anytime.
All right, Trey,
Dave
Wingo.
Hampton. Can't Dave get Hampton. Stories like that anywhere.
Yep, that's good stuff. We'll always remember Dave Hampton here. All right, Darren. You've got another word one more time about DraftKings.
Indeed I do. This is a big sports week. Big sports week. Don't forget there's still action tonight. You've got a good game in the Rams and the Bucks on Monday Night Football. But triple header on Thursday. DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is going to give all players the opportunity to take advantage of that triple header, because the final game is the Ravens, the team the Titans just beat in Pittsburgh, to take on the Steelers. And they're going to give you a chance to double your money if either Baltimore or Pittsburgh score a touchdown in Thursday night's game. All it takes is for you to double your money is one touchdown. That's it. All you have to do is opt into the promotion, place your bet, and then sit back and watch the ball enter the end zone. On top of that, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering all new players a deposit bonus up to $1,000. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app, use the promo code 1025GAME when you sign up, and get this can't-miss offer. Once again, that code 1025GAME. Do this during the sign-up process for a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprises a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com Sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. November is Hockey Fights Cancer Month, and I know this month is starting to wind down, but it's not too late for you to help out the Predators Foundation. They need your help towards the Smashville Donates campaign. Visit nashvillepredators.com/365fund to make a donation to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund presented by Twice Daily. Purchase Hockey Fights Cancer gear or learn more. You can also bid on the silent auction items by texting PREDS to 76278. Texting PREDS to 76278. Follow PREDS Foundation on Twitter by that, at PREDS Foundation on Twitter or Instagram for more info. Is there any new news on the hockey front? Anything we could sink our teeth into?
I don't think there's anything you could sink your teeth into. The vibe right now is that they're at the very difficult talks right now, and I guess from some of the things that are being written, they're trying to avoid, you know, getting off track. But what they have to figure out is, what are we paying the players now? How much are we going to defer to later when the teams are starting to bring in revenue? As we talked about a lot, several months ago they agreed on a new CBA, which was huge. And so, like the baseball players, the players thought, hey, okay, we agreed on what we're going to get paid. We get 50% of the revenue, and they're going to pay us for 70-some-odd percent of the games that are being played. But the owners are saying, boy, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to have fans anytime soon. Can we talk about that? And that's where the talks are right now, trying to figure that out. On top of all of the logistics, you know, where are we playing? How many games are we playing? What's our realignment? How do we deal with all the teams in Canada? So it's a mountain of stuff that they have to get done. I haven't seen anything new today. I think they've done a pretty good job of keeping it in-house for the most part. They haven't really argued in the media. And so let's just hope that in the next week or so, we get a definitive plan, and they get through this. I think the bottom line is they know they've got to play, right? They can't sit out. And they know that for a while, there's not going to be a lot of revenue coming in other than the TV revenue and, of course, just the exposure, keeping the game out in front of people. It's going to be a struggle. They know it, but they got to keep playing until things can get better. And hopefully we continue to get good news on the vaccination front, which is going to be a big part of the equation because they're pushing everything back. They want to make sure they're done before the Olympics start, right? So they're giving themselves a little extra time. They hope to get done sooner, but they know they want to be done by about July 15th at the latest. So I think that's where it's at.
About a month later.
Yeah, about
normal,
a month.
And you're starting 3 months later, so obviously they're not playing 82. What do you think? It's going to be like 60?
They're talking about 60, maybe a few more. And if they figure, I think if they get started somewhere close to January 1st, they can squeeze in the 60 range. But that's all being – there's a lot of different numbers, specific numbers getting thrown out there. It's as many as they can play. But it all is going to come down to how quick they can start. I did see this. Bridgestone Arena, they put the ice back in. When you start doing the math, if they're going to start January 1st, the teams have to be ready to start skating and training pretty soon. So you got to have the ice in. So that's a good sign, an optimistic sign that, you know, maybe in another week or so, or in the next week, that you'll have a date to start training camp.
Yep. I did see that, where the ice is down. That's hopefully a good sign of things to come. I did also see when I was away that the Raptors made their decision, and it's not the decision we were hoping for, unfortunately.
Bummer.
It's not to play in Toronto. It'll be in another city that starts with a T. It'll be Tampa.
Yep.
So it looks like they'll be in the home of the Lightning. So that's, they're going to play in that arena down there in Tampa. And just kind of hoping it would be here, but they chose Tampa.
Yeah, they're missing out.
They are. They are. Also wanted to pass this along. Western Kentucky and Charlotte were supposed to play on Saturday. That game has been moved to Tuesday, December 1st. Not tomorrow, but because of still COVID issues with Charlotte. Remember, we talked to Will Healy before they were supposed to come to Murfreesboro and play MTSU, and that game got postponed. That now Charlotte was supposed to come to Bowling Green and take on Western, and it's now been moved to... Was that game supposed to be at Western?
I have not looked.
I think that's right. Maybe not. Maybe it was supposed to be at Charlotte.
Yeah,
no, I think it was supposed to be in Charlotte. Yeah, it was supposed to be in Charlotte on Saturday. It's now been moved to Tuesday, December 1st, so they will not play this weekend in Charlotte. So that game will be a Tuesday, December 1st game. So I wanted to pass that along. Let's talk about, you know, Trey Wingo brought up, and we haven't talked about it enough today because we should. That A.J. Brown touchdown. I mean, come on.
Incredible.
Are you kidding me? I mean, when you saw that play out, who in the world raised your hand thought he was getting it in the end zone?
Well, I think I was reading the account from The Athletic, from the Ravens' point of view. I think they measured that he caught the ball, what was it, about 9 yards shy of the first down, and not only got the first down but got the touchdown.
Yeah, I was getting ready to come back with, raise your hand if you thought he was even going to get a first down. Forget a touchdown. I mean,
right. And remember, they had some disasters in the red zone, and one of them was right before that where they bobbled the snap and they got sacked. So you're thinking, oh, man, you know, they've just really killed their chances of cashing in here and taking the lead. But, you know, it's all forgotten. It's all forgotten after a play like that.
Pretty impressive play. Which, once again, the Ole Miss receivers. I mean, think about how much attention and plays like that, you know, the country has talked about, not just their local markets. Everybody here, you know, in all NFL markets, talking NFL, have talked about DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown, you know, a specific play where you go, wow. And by the way, how did they not win more games in college? How in the world
did
the roster of those two guys? No, I know. The answer is they had no
And defense. They had a bunch of guys, bunch of scholarships cut.
Guess what? They still don't have any defense, and they can score well.
But remember, that was just the aftermath of the Hugh Freeze thing. So their scholarship numbers were way down.
Yep.
And, you know, they had those guys, and they put up a lot of points, but they didn't have enough numbers to stop anybody. So there's your answer. And so,
in fact, Vanderbilt
caught the ball
in their final
nine.
Year, right? Those two, their final year at Ole Miss. Didn't Vanderbilt beat them here?
Yeah.
Is that the game they beat them in overtime?
Yeah, in a wild game. Yeah, a great game that went right down to the wire back and forth, and that helped Vanderbilt get to a bowl game. They had to have that game to get to a bowl game. So A.J. caught the ball on the nine, and when he caught the ball, you know, you're thinking – well, there's
field goal,
or hey, okay, they've gotten some of the yards back, and they'll have a chance to go for it on fourth down because they probably would have had they would have had to go for it, right? At that
stage, I
guess
it was 21. So it was 21-16.
Yeah, field goal doesn't. You're not going to get the ball back there. They would have had to have gone for it there.
There was what, 2.5 minutes to go, something like that.
Yep. Because I think the Ravens got it back with like 2:15 on the clock.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they probably would have had to go for it, I guess.
But that was an incredible individual performance. And, of course, from the Ravens' point of view, it was a defining play of who wanted it more. The Titans wanted it more, right? If you're the Ravens, you're like, how did we missed a bunch of tackles. How did he get through three guys? If you're the Titans, you're saying that was a tremendous individual performance. And both are probably true.
Well, if you listen to Lamar Jackson and other Ravens players, yeah, the Titans did want it more, which I think if you're John Harbaugh has you and your staff pretty alarmed today. Like, that's concerning. If your players are openly saying, yeah, that team wanted it more than us, when you're coming off a bad performance on Sunday Night Football against the Patriots, albeit in a driving rainstorm, doesn't matter. You still lost. I mean, you scored first, and then once New England countered with the touchdown, you played catch-up the whole game and lost to New England.
But I would say this.
That's your response?
For those that are using that play from the Ravens side, we would say watching A.J. Brown every week, that is one of his best attributes, is when he catches the ball, number one, he's able to make quick moves right away, and he's so big and strong, he's very hard to tackle. Right, so when he catches those crossing routes or down the field, he's very physical. So it wasn't completely out of the realm that you were surprised that he could carry guys. Right, his issue has been lately just hanging on to the ball. Even the one in overtime, he juggled for a second. So he's in a little bit of a slump catching the ball as cleanly as he normally does. And you know, you're hoping for a big finish for him, but it was finally a game where both Brown and Corey Davis had key catches at key times. That was something it was a real interesting thing. We had never really seen that before. So that's a great sign that, okay, it is possible to have both Brown and Davis in the rhythm and catching big passes.
The news is not good on the Joe Burrow front. We already knew that he was lost for the season, but the Bengals have found out, and Joe Burrow has found out, that he has a torn ACL and MCL and has suffered other structural issues in his knee. Yikes. What you hope is that he has a speedy recovery.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long recovery, but that he comes back, right? You hope that this is something that doesn't affect his career. It sounds like he messed up his knee pretty good.
You just hope that he's ready to go to start next year.
Yeah, which I don't know.
It may not be a given.
I don't know. Yeah.
And it's ironic they were playing the Washington football team with Alex Smith, who gets the win, right? And he was the guy that came back from a very complicated injury that took a long, long time. Hopefully for Burrow, it's not that complicated, but, you know, I was watching Alex Smith. He was asked about that. And he said, yeah, you know, I've been there. And he said some great things about Joe Burrow. So many people have been so impressed with what they've seen from him. So, yeah, that's the kind of guy you want to see get back. He makes the league better because he looks like he's pretty special.
You know what we'd have to admit, or at least I'll have to admit, I never dreamed Justin Herbert would be this good. And I know
he's good.
I'm not going to get caught up because I've just said it. You can't. He's going to have a special rookie season. But we have to – let's check out year three. Let's check out year four. Because right now, he is way better than I thought he was going to be in this league. I just had serious doubts about him. I think he's going to be your rookie of the year, and we'll see if he is the real deal, because I wasn't sure about him. In fact, I was leaning toward, I would not touch Justin Herbert, at least not as high as he went to the Chargers. But right now, man, he is having a phenomenal season.
And how many more can he start getting? A few more wins. We know it's incredible how many close losses that whole franchise has had, even going back to before they even drafted him. But that's going to be one of the marks, is can he start finding ways to win the close games? And they've got some games, right? They don't play the Titans this year, but they could help the Titans out. They've got the Bills next week. They've got a game with the Raiders later in the season. Just a couple of examples of, you know, how they could play the spoiler. But that is another guy. It's exciting when you see a guy coming in and put up numbers like that. I mean, he's got, he's got 22 touchdowns and only 6 interceptions. A quarterback rating of almost 105. That's amazing for a rookie.
Oh,
didn't see that coming.
He's having an unbelievable year.
I thought they would struggle, honestly. I thought he would struggle at the beginning of the year. But, man, I thought there were quite a few question marks about him coming out of the draft, right? There were some that thought that you know, he might go the route of a Josh Rosen. I mean, there's, what does everybody always say about the Oregon quarterbacks, right? The Oregon quarterbacks haven't done well.
Well, the track record is not good. It's not an opinion. It's just a fact. They haven't.
He's reversing that trend.
It's early, but boy, he deserves all the credit right now because, man, he throws for 366 yesterday in their win, albeit the Jets, but doesn't matter. Threw for 366.
The good old Jets.
You know, Trey was right about when I brought up Roethlisberger. Mahomes, when you watch that game, I mean, the Raiders played perfectly. They were in control most of the game, and they scored to go ahead with like a minute 45 to go, and everybody knew it, that to go up three, and it's just like everybody knew, like, yeah, good luck with that. Good luck with that lead.
Well, there was,
that's how good Patrick Mahomes is, and they didn't go down and kick a field goal, right, to push it into overtime. No. They went down, and they scored the touchdown. That's what makes him different than everybody else. He just marched right down the field with precision like he did the whole game and finds Travis Kelce, of all people. Right. Who would throw to Travis Kelce with the game on the line? Oh, wait a minute. Patrick Mahomes would. 22-yard touchdown to win it. But I do go back to Mahomes is the best player and the MVP. But I do wonder at what point in his career is it going to fall into. It's way too early for that now. But when will he start getting penalized for being so good and they'll stop giving it to him like most great players do, right? They get penalized for being great. It's like, yeah, we know he's great. So let's give it to somebody else. I wonder when that starts happening to Mahomes. Because you could give it to him every year. As long as he's healthy, you could give it to him every year for a good while, right?
It's one of the best compliments you can pay a player like that. I think the same feeling was when Aaron Rodgers got another chance yesterday after the holding penalties for the Colts. You're saying, okay, here they come. It's just like it's a given that they're going to get the ball into scoring territory. It's just a matter of whether you're going to hold them to a field goal or they're going to score a touchdown. To the Colts' credit, you know, they did not let Rodgers win the game in regulation. They survived to overtime. They got the mistake in overtime. It wasn't Rodgers' mistake, but they survived long enough to win. I think that's what the Raiders were hoping to do, just survive, get to overtime, because they played admirably, but they just couldn't keep it out of the end zone. There are so many games now, especially when you're not calling the holdings as much. It seems easy to get a pass interference call. If it's close, they're going to give it to you. The best quarterbacks are going to get their teams down there more often than not. I think you have that feeling with the Titans, right? They got the key stop. It wasn't easy, but when Harbaugh challenged, didn't get it, and then they got the false start, and then they had a throw to Andrews. The guy was fairly open. It wasn't an easy throw, but it was just out of his reach, and the Titans got the ball back. You're thinking, okay. And even though they were at their own 10, you're thinking, you got a shot here. You got a shot. The best offenses seem like when they need to score, they're going to score. It's nice to have an offense that's in that club.
No doubt about it. All right, we'll come back, put a bow on Monday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase next. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint. Smoother than smooth. Hey, a little shout out to Nashville SC. Got it done. And tomorrow they will take on Toronto FC in round one of the MLS Cup playoffs. How about that? Call on all the action will be right here on ESPN 94.9. Pregame starts at 4:45. The match begins at 5 p.m. So Toronto and Nashville SC tomorrow late afternoon after they beat Miami on Friday.
Pretty cool. They smoked Miami on Friday.
Smoked them.
It was a great performance. That goal by Mr. Leal was unbelievable. An absolute missile that went in, and they just overpowered him. I know Miami had some key players missing. Maybe that hurt their morale a little bit, but you had to love it for the fans that were there. They've had to be very patient, wait their turn to go to any games. They've had to wait through a lot. They didn't get to participate in the tournament coming back. But, you know, and Taylor Twellman was on the broadcast for ESPN. He was saying this because he was letting the national audience know. You know, they had almost 60,000 for the first game, right? This is going to be a special fan base once they get it going. They're off to a great start. They've already built a good competitive team. Who knows? Maybe if they pull an upset tomorrow, and this is, by all accounts, one of the better teams in the league. But if anything can happen for one game, right? We certainly know that in soccer, right? We know it's true in any sport, really, but definitely in soccer. We know Nashville is capable of playing a really strong defensive game. Make one play, you never know.
Did you think J.K. Dobbins was pretty good yesterday?
I thought he was okay.
Yeah, I thought he was okay. I mean, he helped the Ravens. He certainly didn't hurt them, right?
It wasn't, but, you know, I think he's going to be very good. He clearly wants the ball. That was something that was Jim Nantz and Tony Romo were talking about all day during the broadcast. That's what they had gotten from their production meetings, clearly, that he wants to be the man. But I thought the Titans contained, overall, the Ravens running game pretty well, much better than the Colts running game. I thought they let the Colts run too much at key times in the game before.
He ran for almost 5 yards a carry. So, I mean, he did.
He had his moments, yeah.
15 carries for 70 yards, had a couple catches as well. The reason I'm bringing his name up, we told you that the Ravens have shut down their facilities today. Running backs Mark Ingram, who's a zero factor in their offense this year for some reason, and J.K. Dobbins both have tested positive for COVID-19. So,
well, Ingram has been injured. And was just getting to where he was even active. He missed several games.
He had, what, a couple carries?
Yeah, 2 carries for 2 yards. I wonder, this is going to put to the test the theory that, you know, a guy who is presuming that J.K. Dobbins was positive during the game, then wouldn't that put, like, the entire Titans defense on a contact trace in some form? I don't know how that works. But luckily, to this point, there's not a big track record of X player had it, he played against Team Y, and then Team Y had an outbreak, but you just never know.
Well, remember, Minnesota never tested positive.
Yeah, wasn't that something? Like, we know that the Titans presumably had to have had some positive players during that Vikings game, and yet the Vikings never had anybody test positive. So you never know how it's going to work, but I'm sure there'll be a few anxious moments as they do the testing this week for the Titans. Because you'd hate to have that another chapter in that whole thing after what they've been through.
So it looks like they will have Gus Edwards. It'll be, I don't know what they call him, the Gus Bus. I don't know, Gus Edwards against Pittsburgh. Him and Lamar Jackson. That's all they'll have. So that could play a factor in can Baltimore do anything on the ground against that Pittsburgh defense, considering they're going to have. One run, they're going to have Gus Edwards and their quarterback running the ball, basically. So that'll be interesting. By the way, did you get a chance on Friday night? I know a lot of people in this market, why would you be watching Minnesota-Purdue? Well, you're just maybe a big football fan, and it was a game on Friday night. Did you happen to see the end of Minnesota and Purdue?
I did. I wasn't watching it.
I was watching the Nashville SC game.
I have heard there was a lot of very questionable calls, and I know in watching I watched a lot of the Northwestern Wisconsin game. Sean McDonough was talking about that a lot. That the Big Ten has had a lot of issues officiating this year.
They called offensive pass interference on Purdue on the game-winning touchdown, very very late. And all I have to say is, go back and watch the video. And tell me that's offensive passing. I mean, Twitter blew up saying that's the worst call they've ever seen. And by the way, also look how late the flag comes in. How incredibly late. It was a horrific call. I mean, it cost Jeff Brohm and Purdue a win. I mean, this is why coaches go nuts. It was just an awful, awful call. In fact, one of the sports books, if you had Purdue, if you bet on Purdue, you got your money back.
Really?
That's how
Have you ever heard of that before?
No. No, I have not. That's why I brought it up.
That's incredible. I've never heard that, you know, not that I would have ever asked, but I assumed that you would never have that.
I know. Why would they feel the need to do that? It's a bad call. It's not their fault. They don't have anything to do with it.
It's not the first bad call.
Right. They gave people their money back if they
I can't believe
Purdue.
That.
I know. I couldn't either.
Okay, I got to go see this play. I have read about it, but I have not watched the replay.
That tells you how bad it was. One sports book said, okay, we feel so bad for you. That's such a horrific call. If you bet Purdue, we're giving you your money back.
Holy cow.
I had never heard of that. Go check it out. All right, that will do it for us. Fast-moving show as always. We'll be right back at it again tomorrow. Plenty to talk about. You have a great rest of your day. Enjoy it. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Into